ladies, and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting edition of Monday Motivation. Hi everyone, this is Rabbi Garfinkel of Project 613 here in Chicago with a live studio audience. Wow. Hope your ears are okay and open for an exciting podcast today. I want to give a shout out to Sheer Enjoyment, shiurenjoyment.com, where I was told that last week's podcast got 9,400 plus hits. So that's incredible. Sheer Enjoyment is the channel that basically is not like Apple or Spotify. It's literally totally web-based. So a lot of people don't want to go to those sites and just want to look up the podcast on the web. So, wow, that's quite impressive. Want to thank Jake Wyman for all of his amazing help in creating it. Also, Mitchell Green, in contact with them weekly, posting it. So a big shout out to them. Bravo for all the wonderful work that you're doing, in addition to all the other wonderful podcasts and Torah content that is over there on Sheer Enjoyment. If you hear me out there in Sheer Enjoyment, shoot me an email. Let me know what's going on. RabbiShalomG@gmail.com. Would love to hear your feedback. Thank you so much. For everyone else, please like and subscribe. Last week's podcast definitely got a lot of feedback. We're continuing on that theme. What in the world is going on? What in the world is going on? Well, yes, it's a painful but ubiquitous, a very common throughout now and throughout history an issue is that we unfortunately are our own worst enemies. Oy vey. It's bad enough that the non-Jews don't like us, but what happens when we, our own Jewish people, become our worst enemies? And I have to just tip my yarmulke to one of the, if it wasn't so sad, it would be so funny. And we're going to highlight our, a person here, a Jewish person. Now, by the way, I just want to preface this. The laws of Lashon Hara, of saying evil talk about another Jew, are very, very strict and very, very important. It's a Torah mitzvah. So why is the rabbi about to call out a Jewish person on his podcast? Because the Chafetz Chaim says that when there is a Jew who is acting negatively and deleteriously and causing pain and harm to the Jewish people, that it is permitted to call them out and to make them an example in order that others will learn not to do what they're doing. Okay, so for all of us, every Jew should be concerned about Lashon Hara, not speaking evil about other Jews, even if it's true. If it's not true, that's even worse. It's called Hotzah Shemra, slander. But nevertheless, this Jew has earned it with her behavior, and if it weren't so sad, it would be really funny. So who has been dubbed now? This somewhat young woman from Columbia University. Her name has become Kafiya Karen, which is actually pretty funny. Kafiya Karen, you might have known. Her actual full name is Johanna King Slutsky. It's so painful because Slutsk was one of the great yeshivas in Europe. And now this is where we are up to. But anyway, I digress. So Johanna King Slutsky became known as Kafiya Karen because she was the spokesperson for the protesters in the encampment, not just the regular protesters in their REI tents that were identical across the nation. I wonder if this was coordinated or not, but I digress. And not part of those specifically, she was part of those, but she was part of the group of the protesters that broke into Hamilton Hall at Columbia University. Yes, that's called destroying property. That's called illegal seizure. And like, I don't know, there got to be some term of like squatting illegally in some place. and damage broke. They broke windows to get in. That's a crime. That's actually against the law. That is illegal. That is wrong. And so she gets up there and she said, and I'll quote one quote and then possibly part of another one. So we're acting in solidarity with the protest demands for divestment. Now, divestment from where? Not from Iran, which is the world's leading sponsor of terror, or Qatar, or, though I don't know, from China, which actually has real live concentration camps for Muslims called Uyghurs, and all sorts of Uyghurs. Pardon me, I blew that word, but whatever it is, you know what I'm talking about, okay? And any one of bunch of countries and despotic rulers who need to be divested from because they are literally evil to the core. But no, Israel is what she's calling from. Also, financial transparency, which means they want to know what investments Colombia has with Israel. Okay, and finally, they want, well, not finally, almost finally, they want amnesty. Amnesty means we broke the law. We know we broke the law, but we don't want to have to face the consequences of the law. And the negotiating, it's like a thief inside the bank. All right, I know I broke into the bank. I'm in the vault. I got the money. Okay, so here's what I want you to do. I want you to let me out with the money and not prosecute me. It's like almost, and she's saying it with a straight face, like you know, this is obviously. They also asked for a commitment not to send in the New York Police Department or public safety, which would be a grave risk to the well-being of students on campus, including those inside the hall right now. Now, I don't know about you, but you know, I have colleagues on Columbia University campus, and the Jewish students were actually, they were, if they stayed in their room, they're actually just fine. So if they would send police in to get these bad guys out of Hamilton Hall, it would not be a threat at all to the rest of campus and the students. It actually would be wonderful so that the rest of the students could actually go to class. Then, and here's where Kafia Karen really got nailed. She asked for a commitment for food and water to be brought. She says these are basic things that ensure safety of Columbia University's own students. This is like basic humanitarian aid. Could people please have a glass of water? Now, I don't even know to laugh or to cry. And she got lambasted on all over social media. This silver spoon, unfortunately, right, just too Jewish parents and their doctors, and I'm sure she lacks nothing in terms of finances or family. At least they could pay bail if she got arrested. I'm not sure if she actually got arrested or not. And let me just share with you what she was studying, because of course she was a PhD candidate in English and comparative literature. Her dissertation is on fantasies of limitless energy and the transatlantic romantic imagination from 1760 to 1860. My goal is to write a prehistory of metabolic rift, Marx's term for the disruption of energy circuits caused by industrialization under capitalism. I'm particularly interested in theories of the imagination and poetry as interpreted through a Marxian lens in order to update and propose an alternative to historicist ideological critiques of the romantic imagination. Oh, that was actually English. Prior to joining Columbia, I worked as a political strategist for leftist and progressive causes. This is in her own word. And remain active in the higher education labor movement. You can't make this stuff up, folks. I went to Stanford University. It was pretty bad then, but boy, oh boy, it has devolved and it is absolutely amazing. And she, the fact that she called for humanitarian aid for those people who are breaking the law. Imagine that robber in the middle of the bank saying, oh, I need humanitarian aid because I'm stealing this money to give to poor people in South America. And so therefore I'm doing this great cause and I need humanitarian aid to help me rob this bank. And she did not see the emptiness and the ridiculousness of her own words. Now, this lady is not dumb. Now, I know it sounds like she might be dumb. She's actually not dumb. She's got to have some brains on her. What's the problem? She's misguided. She has a total wrong moral compass. We talked a few months ago about the entire replacement of the moral code, the Ten Commandments, the two tablets, for the modern ethics of the day, which absolutely misguide everyone. But unfortunately and sadly, this is not our first rodeo for Jewish people being our own worst enemies. And I want to take you through a quick historical tour of some of the lowlights of Jewish history. Now, in our defense, 2,000 years ago, we were exiled from our land. Again, there's been a constant presence since 70 of the Common Era, since the Romans destroyed the temple. But by and large, certainly after 200s, 300s, the Jewish people's center was no longer in Israel. And we, for the last majority of the last 2,000 years, have been living in exile. And it's pretty hard to stick to your guns, at least for all of us. Okay? And let's take a quick historical survey of some of the highlights or lowlights of Jews being our own worst enemies. Now, this actually happens before the Second Temple was destroyed. It was during the time of Hanukkah. There was a group of Jews who were so enamored with Greek culture, they said, hey, I'm in. Give me this Greek stuff. I like this toga stuff and the feta cheese, the olives, little philosophy, some geometry's there. Architecture, sports. Hey, they were dedicated. They were called misyavnim. Which means they literally, lechit ba'el is a reflexive verb in Hebrew, which means they made themselves into Yavanim. They Greekified themselves. And in fact, 10%, it's estimated 10% of the entire Jewish population were misyavnim, and they fought for the Greeks in the war. They literally fought against their brothers and sisters in the war. Okay? Why? Because they were attracted to a very powerful secular culture, which was very tantalizing. And unfortunately, that is one of the largest examples of us being our own worst enemies. I want to fast forward. Oh, I'm just picking it out. I could pick a bunch of stuff. But let's go to Spain, because you know I love Spain and Spanish history. And it so rings so clear to Jewish history here in America. And there was a guy named Pablo Cristiani, and he was actually a bit of a Talmudic scholar, and was converted to Christianity, and he dedicated his life to attacking the Jewish people and rabbinic literature, not only verbally, but physically as well. This guy was a total loser and zero, and an evil, evil, evil person. He was, in the history book that I read, he was called the bane of the Jewish-Spanish community. And he led, actually, he sort of was put in his place in 1263. He challenged the Ramban. That's like a little flea challenging, you know, Godzilla to a debate. And it was the only debate pretty much in the entire Middle Ages, a disputation where the rabbi was able to take off his gloves and really debate. Everyone agreed, even the Christians who were there, that Ramban, Nachmanides absolutely wiped the floor with them. King James, who guaranteed Nachmanides' safety before the debate, actually said you need to leave because he can't guarantee the safety. And that's when the Ramban Nachmanides went to settle in Israel. And so here's an example of someone, Pablo Cristiani, who was put in his place, but nevertheless that did not stop him. And he continued on after 1263, terrorizing Jewish lives. Now, Spanish history in 1391 was really kind of like what we call the Kristallnacht of Spanish Jewry. 1492, we know, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. He was Columbus Jewish. Okay, actually, more and more sources indicate that he was, or at least he was a converso. But that's for another podcast. But in 1391 was a major pogrom, starting in Seville in Spain, and unfortunately killed up to 100,000 Jews and another 100,000 converted forcibly on the spot to Christianity. Okay, and it basically that was the demise, the beginning of the end. But it was 100-year beginning of the end for Spanish Jews. And in 1414, there was something called the Disputation of Tortosa. Now, why is this significant? Because basically, it lasted about a year and a half from February 1413 to November 1414, and it was a disputation. But unlike the one in 1263, where Nachmanides could speak freely, unfortunately, it was more like an FBI interrogation, that basically was listening to these Christians preach and basically denigrate and dump on Judaism. And the Jews could not respond. Unfortunately, there were many great rabbis there, and many just succumbed to the pressure because it was just exhausting. They literally had to sit there for more than 18 months. And you can imagine coming back, you know, the rabbi coming back to his community and said, oh, I converted to Christianity. Imagine your rabbi doing that. So it was devastating to the Jewish people in Spain. And that was led by a guy named Geronimo de Santa Fe. Aha, sounds like a nice Mexican restaurant in Tucson. No, his real name was Yehoshua Halorki. He was a Talmudic scholar who was converted by another real evil dude named Vincent Ferrer, and who was not Jewish. He was a priest, and Yehoshua Halorki became filled with fire and brimstone to convert his former co-religions. We see this theme that when a Jew leaves Judaism, he or she has an extra venom to lay it on thick to his former quote-unquote co-religionists. Most people know about the Spanish Inquisition is the Grand Inquisitor himself, Torquemada, who was Queen Isabel's personal Rebbe, quote-unquote, I like to say, her confessor. And right when the Jewish leaders were about to convince King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella to rescind the Alhambra Decree and let the Jews stay, Torquemada comes into the throne room and said, Yashki Bashki was sold for 30 silver coins and you are going to sell him out again for the bribe that these Jews are offering. And they change their mind and seal the deal and kick the Jews out of Spain, the reverberations of which we are still feeling to this day. Ad Hayom Hazeh, we say in Hebrew. And Torquemada, of course, himself descended from Jews. Yes, how ironic that the assimilation process of the Spanish Jews ended up being the final hammer blow to knock the Jews out of Spain. Oh, we could go on. The Russian Jews who became communists and Bundists, they're the ones who started Yevsetsia, the Jewish section. Basically, it was the Jewish KGB. And they made life miserable for anyone trying to keep Judaism on any level. And of course, they were murdered in the Great Purge of 1930s by Stalin. Even the chairman himself. Previously, the Volozhin Yeshiva was closed down by Jewish intellectuals, secular intellectuals, because of course, why would you need a yeshiva? Folks, what is going on? What's going on is the self-hating that we have had throughout our history starts with one thing and one thing only. When we detach ourselves from the tree of life, when we detach ourselves either willingly or the energy of the previous generation and their knowledge is not enough to give on to the next generation, either willingly or by inertia. When the Jewish people become detached from our source of life, then we become attached to the other sources of living. And that means Christianity in Spain, and that means communism in Soviet Russia. This is no longer Russia. What is this Russia now? Soviet Union is no longer. But when we lack our internal moral compass, our deriving and accessing our Torah, our Jewish values, then we're going to default to the morals of the day, the culture du jour, the culture of the day. And coming back to Kafia Karen, who I am sure did not get much of a Jewish education, we have to cry. That brain could have been used for something productive, something for the Jewish people. This is the time now. How do we respond to the anti-Semitism of the day? Is to double down. Right? I don't know if you grew up with the song. I grew up with the song, right? Everyone sung, right? It's a tree of life, do those little fast to it, and all of its supporters are happy, right? It's not a joke. It's not just a, it's Eitz Chaim Hila Machazikim Ba. We say it when we bring the Torah out from the Ark every Shabbos. It is our tree of life and is incumbent upon us that we cannot let go. We need to double down and grab harder and grab tighter because that is our secret to success. That is our special secret sauce of survival. Not only making it through, but becoming excellent and to expressing our greatness in a way that helps our people and does not hurt our people, that we do not become self-hating Jews. We don't become our own worst enemies. We become our own best friends. And we can stand up to the tidal wave of criticism against us. So if there is one thing that this wave of anti-Semitism should inspire us to, that is very clearly to hold on to the tree of life. And if you don't know what that means and you need help connecting the Torah, reach out to me, rabbishalomg@gmail.com. We are ready to connect you to the right people and the right resources to cling to our tree of life. God bless. Have an amazing week. And we look forward with renewed energy and renewed vigor and renewed excitement and passion about being Jewish to see you next week for another exciting edition of Monday Motivation.